So this is the time we allocated for the question and answer, so discussion. So cordially invite if you have any question or suitable topic to be suggested for the sake of our discussion.
Okay, I would like to clarify what you said last night. During the time that I walk, I also feel that I have a lot of mental formation. So, which one should be my primary object? Observing my mental formation or trying to focus on left and right?
In meditation, specifically when you are focusing on the mindfulness, you give the priority to the primary object. When you are observing the primary object at a very subtle level, you are bound to see the other aggregates such as the function of feelings, functions of perception, the functions of mental formations and the mind. So, you don't get entangled with them, engage with them. You just keep on observing the primary object. By going there, you are doing a feasibility report, accumulating data. When you are minding on one particular object, how the feelings are going to interact, encountering, how the perceptions are, how the mental formations are, how the mind is. So therefore, let them to play their own game while you are observing the primary object. And then trying to specifically study about one or the other mental faculties, unless otherwise they interact.
Can I try to shift and see?
See what?
Okay, like last night you said, like the needle, observing the needle, how it works.
Yeah.
So supposedly, if I start from walking, and then I feel that the mental formation was a lot, coming one after another, can I try to shift my primary object to work on observing the mental formation?
Not recommended. Because the mind is the forerunner, mind is the very thing cheating you, that is the very thing now going to ask you, that you are going to learn about the mental formations. So it's a mind game. So therefore master the materiality. Materiality is something very viable and there cannot be any kind of a mysticism. That when you are changing the object, due to the suggestion of your very mind, the mind is in a perverted form, maybe. So therefore, don't go to take their opinions. Knowingly only the Buddha says, whenever your mindfulness come up to a certain maturity, backed by a concentration, you will be slowly going as and when the other objects come, such as the feeling, perception, mental formation and the mind, but you must not turn. You must not change the gear from your primary object to others. If it is going to happen, you are just succumb to the situation, you do what is appropriate. But never you change as your will, with your own intention. Then the complication happens. Then the meditation becomes complicated, the mind goes off tracks. Off the tracks and ultimately you are in a mind world, in the fantasizing, daydreaming. So therefore, best thing is to go to the verifiable object, the materiality, whenever possible.
Then there will be the time that if I was trying to observe the needle,
it won't get recorded.
Just again, to clarify what I heard last night. If I was trying to observe how the needle is working in the process, I have to be aware or I have to be careful that during the process of observation is only observation because it could turn into that I actually give the power to my mind to master and conquer my behavior. Is that right?
That mastering of the mastering of the thing that we are, we call the development of the insight, they are, we are basing, we are the establishing based on the materiality. When the materiality becomes subtle and subtle, it is natural for the mind to take the subtle objects like mentality, the feeling, perception and all the kind of thing. So they will happen as a natural unfolding, then your changing of the gear. Whenever you are to change the gear, you have to take the responsibility, you get committed. It's a natural unfolding. That is what the Buddha put Kayanubhasana first in the Satipatthana. And once the Kayanubhasana come up to a certain maturity, it's naturally going to the Vedanubhasana and Chittanubhasana and Dhammanubhasana. It is not asking you to change from this to there, just like a gear. It is natural unfolding, natural way.
Sorry, I don't need to take it all wrong. How about if I am aware that my six contact point, which is the, which are the six faculty, any formation can be formed through one of the six. And if I just play to be done, like just observing which one coming through which faculty, then in that case, it's still in between whether I should focus on one faculty or should I be aware of all the six at the same time. When I try to work on the sensitivity to the contact point, what would be the best way so I would not get trapped into the mind?
That means that they are not in the sitting, not in the walking meditation, maybe walking or in the day-to-day activities. You have all the faculties open, eye, ear, visual objects, ear the sounds, the nose, the smell, tongue and the taste, tactile sensation and the body sensitivity and the tactile sensation and the mind and the mental objects. So when that happens, whenever you are in the day-to-day activities, you have to pay the attention or you must be directed with your intentional work what you do. That you are, if you are supposing to go from here to the supermarket, your main aim is that on the way you see an accident or you hear something and you must understand it is not your main object. Your main object is supposed to supermarket and come, and there you keep all the activities related to that. Other things you consider as the secondary objects. Sometimes secondary object is definitely very grave and dramatic, and there you go there and you have to attend. It is not due to your will and wish, it is demanding. Under such circumstances, you change it, but soon that finish, you have to come back to the main object. And there it says the intentional action is the main thing, and while it is happening, all the other faculties are also pulling your attention here and there. Be aware of it. Don't try then to prepare the agenda for you. You have your own action, your own intentional action that you know why you have taken the decision to go to the supermarket, and while it is happening, don't let the, all the other faculties and the events to make the agenda for you. If it is so, no organization of your life can happen. So while it is happening, the primary object, taking the going to the supermarket as the primary object, you have to understand you can't do it without any distractions. And a lot of distractions happen. Everything must be at the observational level. Don't try to make decisions. Don't try to make decisions according to that. Then you will never fulfill any task, because all the time each and every task is being challenged by the other senses. So that is why it says it's very difficult to, unless otherwise you know the selection of priority, very difficult for such a person to fulfill the task in the world, because it's so much of demanding. So you have to have a certain amount of mindfulness and the priority selection. Which one is the first? That priority selection is the what called sampajanya. Sampajanya was, that means called sometimes clear comprehension. Clear comprehension is something happening whenever the mindfulness comes up to a certain maturity, it presents things in a orderly manner or priority selection, then you are not compelled, you are not moved. You can see in their due gravity, the weight, then comprehension can take the decision, this is the what you must attain. And so much so, when the comprehension, the clear comprehension goes to select the priority, the mindfulness must be always given the peaceful atmosphere for the comprehension to happen. Otherwise, you are doing a decision, arriving at a decision, it is rather emotional or rather with lack of information. So there is no guarantee it will be whether you will take, draw the proper conclusion, proper inference, proper decision. So that with the half-hearted kind of thing, even though the demand, the pressure is too much, whatever you are going to commit, you have to bear the consequences. Best thing is not to rush to a decision, rather accumulate as much as data, just like a big project you are doing, accumulation of the feasibility report, accumulation of the data before putting into a plan and implementation. But in the untrained mind is always rushing to a decision, thinking it is creating a demand and kind of thing. Ultimately, you don't know when the consequences are going to happen, how it happens and what it happens. So therefore, rather than rushing, be more observant, accumulate as much as possible data, and then only you can arrive at a lasting decision. So decision-making process.
There was a time that I observed and also have to make a decision. I became tense. So that's probably I was too quick to make a decision, right?
So that you can put forward a lot of reasons why you are putting a decision, why you are rushing to a decision. But if someone coming and giving a question and asking you a decision quickly, it is not an asking, it's a punishment. You have to decide it now means you are in a hell of a fix. You must not allow any person to make agenda for yourself, unless otherwise a request. Anyone can suggest that the second thing is yours, because you are the one going to get the consequences. If you are having so much of pressing thing, that means you are in a hell of a situation. Mind is definitely in anxiety and some pressure and kind of thing. So therefore you have to make, you have limited capacity. You have limited amount of likings and dislikes. And so much of pressure comes, how to filter them? So my Burmese master says, when you have so much of requests, let all the requests come and see the just and unjust at the beginning. Whether this demand is demanding something justifiable or unjustifiable. And out of the just, take what is possible. I mean, you have the capacity. If it is beyond your capacity, even if it is justifiable, you can't do it. How does you take what is possible, do what you like? Then results are much assured. But if you are doing due to the pressure, if you are doing without considering the just and unjust, and the capacity beyond you can accommodate, then definitely you are exhausted. You are tiring yourself with the no good encouraging results. So what is the just? What is possible and what you like. That is definitely going to give a job satisfaction as well as a fairly or good amount of good results. So therefore this filtering is what we call Sattva Sampajanya, which Satyamata Sutta the Buddha explained. Whenever you are going to take a sidetrack, take this decision, take be careful. You are taking a side track. Are we sure? Are you sure that you are, is the situation under your control? Are you sure whether you are going to do something justifiable? Are you going to do something you can do but within yourself? Or can you do it in happily with your desire, with your liking? If that is the case, then it's going to, there's a then, more chances for you to get the good results. Otherwise, that whenever the situation happens and if you're going to commit, basically you will end up with unpredictable desire results and depression. Most of the dissatisfaction and the depression.
But now, how do you know whether you have a good level of mindfulness? How do one judge?
So, that is basically, if you are a regular practitioner, in the sitting meditation, more you associate with the primary object, that's the most and close criteria to say whether you are mindful or not. In the walking meditation also, how much you are with your primary object. Not the quality, but the quantity wise, that is the criteria. In the day-to-day activities also, how much you are wandering, how much you are fantasizing and kind of thing. It's a negative mark. But if you are, if you have a lot of points where you become here and now within the day, that is an indication the mindfulness is catching. But if you are losing the time in terms of here and now and get engaged or dragged off by your desire or hatred or other kind of thing, if it is increasing in the trend, that is a bad sign that mindfulness is reducing. So therefore, the primary object in that sense, giving a yardstick for you to measure whether the mindfulness is increasing, but this is talking about the quantity of mindfulness, and on top of that only the quality of mindfulness happens. How much you can penetrate into the object, the primary object. More and more you penetrate into the results jump without leaps and bounds, not to confine to the materiality. When the quality increases, it is learning how to deal with the mentality also, the feelings, perceptions also. So therefore, just by engaging on the primary object, which is materiality, so the form, does not indicate that your mindfulness and the knowledge and comprehension will be limited to the material. When the quality of the material and the mindfulness is increasing, it is go beyond the materiality, go to the mentality, is like something like for feelings and perception. So therefore, the mindfulness has two facets, the quantity and quality. But at the beginning, you are just giving the quantity. And then only the quality will come to be as a specialization.
Well, quality comes naturally or quality comes with effort?
At the beginning, with effort. At the beginning, you have to implement it, facilitate it. It says that the quantity and quality you can attribute to the vitakka and vichara. Vitakka means the applied thought. You are applying only to this one. That means you are forgetting about the others. The vichara means you are seeing the shapes and the manner of this one, just not going and going. You taste it. You suck the sap of the object. So that you have to promote, that you have to train your mind. Otherwise it will be very lethargic. Due to your pushing, it will go and come without getting the touch of it, without getting the taste of it. So therefore at the beginning you have to train it, come to know the art, then it catches the momentum. So keep on accumulating the different facets, different shapes, different manners of the same object. So that then only you can understand the sensational transference. Otherwise it will appear like an ego, appear like a permanent, as far as you are not penetrating. So even though it go and touch it, or if even if the mind is go and apply it to the object, If you are not sharp enough, the thing has thing appear like equal. But when you are rubbing and going to touch and get the taste of it only, that you see its appealing, its taste, shape, the manner is slowly changing. So therefore, at the latter part, when it's going to catch the momentum, you must withdraw yourself as much as possible, let the mind itself to go penetrate. At the beginning, your personal involvement is there. You have to do it mechanically. And once it has come up to its maturity, you must allow it to happen slowly. Ultimately, the mind itself will learn the ways and means to go into and suck all the sap, all the juice of the taste of the object.
But Gandhi, still you have to try, in the sense, you can't let it go on its own, like say, you breathe it, you in and out breathe it, and you see the various heat for the cold for the waves, and but what happens is, as you go on it, you get sidetracked, then you lose the, sometimes you know, get, when it gets subtler, you lose that, when you lose the primary focus, then you lose the other things as well.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, this is what happened to me. When I was breathing, I used to get the heat and cold and sort of vibrations, waveform. Then the body, once it happened to me, the body was like, whether I didn't know whether the breath was moving or the body was moving. So I had to voluntarily stop the breathing to see what was really going on, because I was confused. So then I knew it was the breath, it was causing vibration. But my mind was telling me it was the body. So I was a little bit confused, and then from that time I was asking.
So that means that as the, according to the example you given, that you have done is correct, because you reduce the confusion by your simple trial. So what is the thing in the theoretically, it says is, when you go to the very subtle layers, the thing become transitional, and there are a lot of threatening happens, a lot of unpredictability happens, a lot of fearfulness happens, a lot of baselessness happens. Their mind become panicky and come up with so much of suggestions, because it knows it losing its power. The egoistic is losing its power. The conceit is losing its power. The desirability will be replaced by the boredom. Desirability will be replaced by the monotony. So their mind is becoming something like a fish out of water. So there are two things are threatening you, your life and your body. So the Buddha says, specifically the teacher says, when you come up to that kind of a transitional period, if you wish to develop your faith, if you wish to develop your energy, if you wish to develop your mindfulness, wish to develop your concentration and the wisdom, sacrifice your body and the life. But to go prepared, even though my body is going to get scattered off, I don't care, I will believe on this object, meditation. Even I am going to die, I am going to send man, no problem. Because you have only two things to sacrifice, body and the life. So unless otherwise you are ready to do it, these are the two things upon which you are entertaining doubts and worrying and all the kind of things. So, more and more you go there, you know, and you are really engaged in the meditation, mindfulness also catching, and the object is really rubbing against. Under such circumstances, you must be ready to sacrifice the body and the love to the body and the life it is, kāyecha, jīvitecha, anapekkata upatta. Apekkata means the expectation. Anapekkata means you are ready to give. That is the core point. It becomes the heroic effort. It is not the mere effort. You are ready to sacrifice yourself. So that is why each and every person, not only the meditation grounds, you see any hero in any nationality, any subject, at a time they were ready to give up. Then only they became, they come into the next sphere. This is transitional, transformation of this paradigm happen at the cost of your body and the life. So on that sense, the Buddha without any teaching he says, take myself as the pivot, give up your body, give up your life, otherwise your reinforcement of the faith never happens. Your faith is very wavering. Your energy also limited. You don't know your full capacity. Mindfulness also never becomes steadfast. And your concentration also subject to changes. Your wisdom also not fulfilled because you are preservative towards the body and the life. So you must go prepared, even the body going to wave, even the breath going to wave, then never mind. And that is how you come to know the perverted nature of the mind. Vanchanika dharma, or the cheating nature of the mind. It can do any, it can be up to any mischief, any mystery, any magic. But if you are going to believe, you have to sacrifice the truth. If you are to get the truth, you have to sacrifice the body and the life. So this is happening in the early part of, it says that, for example, if you take, I don't know whether you are familiar with 37 factors of enlightenment, with 37 factors of enlightenment, the mindfulness itself is representing in 8 places. That means at the beginning at the Satipatthana level, and then it goes to the faculty and it becomes power, it becomes the enlightened factor, and the ultimate it becomes the eightfold path, one aspect of the eightfold path. So there are, whenever the mind becomes, the mindfulness becomes indriya, that we are going to take the upper hand about the other faculties, mindfulness take the upper hand at the cost of your life and body. Otherwise, mindfulness is paralyzed. It is not up to the mark. So, each of us have one or the other thing is leading factor. Mindfulness is tell you what is the leading factor. And when that leading factor is going to take the upper hand, it has to sacrifice for the namesake your body and the life. So, that is the commitment. It is demanding your healthy mentality. If you have no healthy mentality, definitely at that moment you will be wavering. Definitely you will take a step back. That is called fear of freedom. That has been well explained by Eric Chong. He says, whenever we are fighting this changing nature or earthquake going to happen, our base is going to shake. Over there, we have to wait. Whether we go back and preserve our body and the life, or we go to the truth, to the liberation. So, our conservative mind never takes that chance of liberation, because when that taken it, mind loses its egoistic trip. So, therefore, it comes out and gives so much of reasoning to why not come back and preserve your life and the body at the cost of the truth or liberation or the freedom. So therefore he has treated the fear of freedom. So very interesting, not meant for this meditation, but he says our freedom is always there, but our rational mind never takes this as an option, because whenever we are selecting the freedom, our rational mind is losing the grip. It's based upon your body and the life. So the day you are going to say at the cost of body and the life, I am going to go to the truth, it's a second place. You have to make a decision, no second person to share with, because no one can understand. So the Buddha said, this is your primary human right. You must not keep another person to get the second. Then he or she will never. So you must have your own decision to make it, come over Chicago. Take the decision and go. So we have to take that decision once for our sansara. Once taken, you will understand that decision is costing everything. That is in return reinforcing the faith, reinforcing the energy. reinforcing the mindfulness, reinforcing the concentration and the wisdom, and not that kind of a galvanized or reinforced faith and kind of thing, you can't put into words. You can't convince others to live, because everyone is preservative, self-preservative. They wanted to have this body intact. They wanted to have this the so-called their likings and dislikings, their personality intact, so therefore they are not ready to sacrifice. So they will be happy with the moral conduct, they will be happy with the concentration, but never go for wisdom, which is based upon the liberation, the aiming at the liberation. So therefore, the liberation is not much of an expensive thing. It's fairly cheap. With our anchorage to this body as a life, our anchorage to the rational knowledge, our anchorage to the opinion of the mind, the rational mind is, we are so slave. Always asking the rational mind, it will never give a chance for you to liberate yourself, because it's losing the reason. So therefore, you have to understand the magic game. The vicious nature of the human mind, vicious nature of the rational mind, and you feel like it is the only thing he is going to give kind of a argumenting for yourself. That is argumenting not for yourself, it is argumenting for its own establishment, self-establishment. So therefore they are, it becomes irrational. I'm going against the grain. It's a swimming upstream. For that one, the Buddha says they should have a role model. They should have a preparedness. They should have a theory understanding. They should have a certain amount of your own mistakes, so trial and error, and some success. When everything comes together only, you develop that kind of a vibrant enough means enough. Now you have to go, you have to jump. But even then, if it is happening at the, of course, at the one time and then onward, you have your own immunity. But even then, it's been challenged. Again and again, you have to re-employ it, and then only you will understand. It's just a mere the mirage. It's just a mere image. There's nothing threatening. So you have to take this bold decision, then onward, you know what to do and when to do. Otherwise, rational mind is such a very expensive lawyer. Very, very expensive lawyer, always self-critic. Never give that bold against the grain decision.
So it is by, you know, increasing the mindfulness. That's the only way.
No, mindfulness itself is won't go to that level. The mindfulness come and show the world. It says, this is the point, you are always going there and come back. And when the mindfulness become your second nature, the clear comprehension come and tell you, this is the point, so far, so much, you are depending on your rational mind, and that is safeguarding only the ego, it is safeguarding only the conceit, it is safeguarding only your desire, that you have another option. You can be rational. You can be going against the grain. And that is, I don't know whether it's a decision or something electric, something happening. So it is not depending on any other factor. It is completely not cause and effect. This decision is not cause and effect. Once that happens, it happens. If it is not so, everything happening with the cause and effect, that means you are, the rational mind is coming. But there is a kind of a shifting of paradigm. And in every point, you are completely alone. Even the Buddha is not there. Even the teacher is not there. Not any beloved one. But you have to take it. And that is what ultimately going to answer the question. So therefore, it is, how do you call that, completely independent decision. Not depending or not suspending upon anything. All your knowledge and everything, every assets and achievement going against that. That is the most intrinsic nature of it. anything you accumulated, anything you call asset, is always becoming a burden for that kind of a quick decision, impromptu decision. So therefore, the both the Patachara and for the Sopa can kind of be easier. Because they have nothing to sacrifice, they have lost. So for them it's easy, but those who have achieved, that Jesus Christ told that going through a camel going through a needle hole is easier. But the rich person come to the God is so difficult. Because that they have a lot of assets to drop in order to maximize or develop the freedom. Appreciate the freedom. You have to look at it and shed them down. Put aside. Otherwise they are working against it. So that is the point where the mind is now shaky. Sometimes the body is shaky, sometimes sweating, sometimes you get tremblings. Everything happens, that's a very good sign. Now you are nearing the decision. And over there, are you going to consider the body and the life as the pivotal thing, or ready to take a quick, rational, unpredictable, irrational, not rational decision?
The point that you're talking about is beyond that? In the theory it says,
Jnata Parinya means that just apprehension by knowledge, theory knowledge. You are going to say the rational knowledge will never going to leave you. It's a trap. It's a prison. So, but anyway, our world and the external world, the parents and teachers are always promoting us to develop the rational knowledge and the essence. So when you are practicing, at a time you come to know all these rational knowledge is shifting the present moment, not leaving the mind in the present moment. When you are going to go to the present moment, at a time you have to come to a tirana parinya, a decisive position. I have to either go by this rational possession or irrational impromptu thing. So when that happens, Dhatu Manasikara is the stage there, because you don't see it is in-breath and out-breath. You have not seen the liberation. But the in-breath and out-breath has changed into different language. It has become a Dhatu Manasikara. So your whole body is internal, external. Boundary is the only matter. But we just die. As to air, salt, soil. But whenever the boundaries also go on, it flows through, you don't know whether you are here or you are in the whole body or you are the whole universe. So at that moment, when the fearful mind is always come back here or try to assimilate and see the configuration of your sitting posture, they try to open the eyes and see whether I am intact. But when that happens, if you can be prepared, now is the rational mind is threatened. And do I have the faith upon the Buddha? Do I have the enough courage, not just courage, but hilarious heroic courage? Something to do new. Do I have the mindfulness to maintain from this shifting of the paradigm? Even the things are happening, can I maintain the mindfulness? Can I be still concentrated even the world is in the earthquake or tsunami? Can I still maintain the problem? Can my wisdom comprehend the situation? If the mind wish to do something, it can make all the world trembling. That is just my wisdom bubble. So they are only the decision, the Pachirana Parinya, that you can't expect anyone to come and rescue you. But understand, you are the person who created this problem. Now it has come to the brink. It has come to the critical point. Are we? Am I? Are we is out? Am I? To go through. When that decision taken only, you can understand the burden of your assets. They are completely working against which is pulling you back to the rational. So that you understand the attachment to your what you have achieved is the burden you can't fly. It is like a balloon is first they have to hook into the earth and then develop the hook there. Out there, have to cut the each and every shackles, then only it becomes going up. Otherwise it is bounded to the earth. So likewise, then you can cut because you know now it is ready to go up. So that decision is not religious. It is not spiritual. It's irrational. It's unhuman. So for that only, that changing of your language and all the things are little by little changing. The breath becomes dhatumanasikara, body becomes dhatumanasikara, and the feelings, perception, everything, you understand. So transient, you can't make any conclusion, there is no criterion, there is no yardstick. Everything is the temporary higher things. So they are what is the ultimate. They are only you can understand your body, your likings and disliking, your positions. So everything is putting you back into the same yardstick, same measuring capacity, and therefore you have the traditional way of looking. Within that traditional outlook, liberation is not included. Rational mind never includes the liberation. It is talking about the circling and in the vortex. If you wish to take the liberation into your combination, you have to sacrifice, you have to challenge all your possessions, all your rational mind, all your knowledge. You are the only person who can do it. If I am going to tell you, it's a crime. If I am going to tell you, leave aside all the possessions and kind of, it's a crime. So therefore, no second person is involved. You have to come up to that vain system. And then understanding the friction in the transatlantic journey, disadvantages, and the way the other side, where there is no bondages, and you are the only one. Therefore, the Buddha says, don't call me, I am not coming. I am not your savior. I am not going to give you that liberation from anything. I am just giving you the information. I give a chance you to face this situation. But the decision is up to you. So much so is respecting individual psychology. And but the thing is, when we are in the religious life, we are going to impose upon others. You must look like that, you must do like that. That is the karma. That is the ism. That is the Buddhism. But the Buddha Dhamma never press, never impose something, no command. See the person, say you, you see it as just like the Buddha saw it and the other liberated people saw it, and they took their own decision, and you will say it's a committed suicide. For a person living in the full-fledged life, it is a kind of a psychological commitment of the suicide. So it's called that, on the knowledge-wise, you are cutting off the labor cord. You are cutting off the cord to the mother. This thing, you are in the shuttle, in the space. Then only you can go to the space, otherwise you are hooked with the mother Mauyani, the mother shuttle, mothership. So that is the way the Buddha becomes so radical. It's so like a samurai. It's not demanding any small thing, asking you already at the life. Not less than that. But even then, it is not for the Buddha. But he says, you must be ready to sacrifice. I mean, that is the biggest generosity, the biggest dana we are doing for the sake of truth, for the sake of liberation. But see, how to sell this kind of idea in America? Because the whole world is asking you to have more and more possessions, consumerization, materialism, and being so, to sacrifice, asking to at least for a thought moment to see the disadvantage of it, then what is this economic system? What is this political background? What is this socialization? All going to appear negative. So, that does not indicate you are going against it. You say, they have their limited values, but at least for 1 second, you must have the idea to see their flaws. Disadvantage. So that is why this, the people in the sensuous world find these things as nihilistic, disconstructive, and talking about the backwardness, don't see the aesthetic part of the world and the sensuous indulgence, they define it as that is something apish. Apis. Single apis means that not entertaining what is given. Apis jivita. In English, that's another term. And therefore, Nietzsche and Schopenhauer was explaining it for the first time in the West. All the other psychologists, they can't deny them, but they say you are distant, you are nihilistic. And your theory is completely against the civilization, against the other productivity and creativity. But the main thing they do is, if you understand this world as something created by a omnipotent omniscient God, that is negative. But the Buddha says world is on the suffering. It's lying on the suffering. If it is so, getting rid of this is the only way out. So after you develop the qualities, you must see the flaws, you must see the disadvantages. So for that, you must be very good. So, but even in the Buddhism, even in the three trainings, the moral training and the concentration training, never talk on that side. They are always self-assertive, boosting the self. But only in the Vipassana, after a certain amount, as you mentioned, at the Dhatu Manasikara and beyond, without that, no go. They are itself become a burden to go forward. And it is, you can't borrow it from someone. It must be assimilated with it oneself. That is called samsara bhaya. You have an urgency to get rid of this everlasting perpetuating of suffering.
So, Bhante, so when we are meditating, say, I am walking, Dharma is this place, so how can you get rid of myself or ego?
So that is the point that Dhatu Manasikara comes to be. Whenever Dhatu Manasikara is going to work, the in-breath and out-breath is happy like changing from cold to the warmness, and long to the shortness. And in the walking also, you see earth element is there when it is dropping, and the air element is there when it is lifting. It's a matter of elements rather than the doer. Unless otherwise you go to that language, that communication is very difficult because I is always behind in our life. So this says the passive and active verb, active phases of the language. When it, you say it rains, no doer. It rains. So ultimately when you are in the good walking meditation, walking happens. In the breathing also, when you come to the subtle breathing, there is no one breathing. You are just a mere observer. You can see the breathing takes place. So that is, unless otherwise mind come up to that level, very difficult for you to get rid of this linguistic hook. I am walking, I am in breathing, I am out breathing. That is why it says, don't do force breathing. Force breathing is always I, pregnant with I. So, by practicing long time only, you can come to a point, it is just mere happening. You are a distance observer, or independent observer, see things happen. At that level only, you can understand the shape, breaking of boundaries. As far as you are going to say, I am walking, I am doing kind of thing, even the meditation, if you are going to do something, in meditation, that means you are imposing I, or sankhara, or mental formation, so much so, your mind takes the upper hand. You must let everything happening. At the beginning, as you asked the first question, at the beginning you have to do, you have to get the momentum. Once the momentum given, that is snowboarding effect. It says when on the top of the mountain, if there is a big boulder, you have to dig it and put it to the slope. Once it put into the slope, it gathers the momentum. Even if you touch, you can't stop it. And when you are taking and lifting and till it put it to the slope, a huge amount of manual work. Then it catches the momentum.
but this is not a question, but comes up in most of your talks. You know, different dhyanas talk about Pachya Parikranyana and Samasana, and they are, can you please explain a little bit? I mean, all I understand is until you get to Dhyabhaya, it's not even Vipassana dhyanas, right? Can you please?
So far we have gone to the three talks, we have gone to the materiality, the form. The Buddha says, unless otherwise you see the four faces, you will not be liberated. First, you have to see the form as form. Second, you have to see the beginning of the form. Third, you have to see the liberation of God, this end of the form, and the way leading to liberation. So, if you take the form as the breath, in-breath and out-breath, breath also cut into in-breath. So, usually you see untrained mind is the peak of the in-breath once it's come up with a certain maturity. Then only you can feel it, and some people even can't. But we say some people can see. And it's a bell-shaped curve. You can see the tip of the iceberg. And so much so you are looking at it, won't make any change in your personality, any change in your mindfulness, nothing, knowledge going to happen. Therefore, the Buddha says, if you wish to see things, wish to phenomena in a detailed way, penetrative way, inside way, just see the beginning. So we'll say, you have taken that advice. So as and when the breath happens, you are be prepared, diligent, and see. And then you can see from the perception, starting point, and then going up. So now that means you are seeing the middle and the beginning. Seeing the middle only is the untrained mind. That is called Namarupa Paccayana. When you see the beginning and the end, middle, that means you see each and every phenomena has a hidden part known as beginning. Unless otherwise you are penetrative, unless otherwise you focus, it naturally won't come. So you have to see. The moment you see the breath, in breath, you see it is exactly the out-breath. It's exactly in the heat, the desire, the hatred. Everything we come to know when it comes up to a certain maturity. But that maturity comes because of your negligence. You have not vigilant when it comes into being. So therefore the vigilance means, apamada means, mindfulness means to each and every phenomena has a beginning. The moment you see the material to a mentality, the mentality, the middle and the beginning, that is what you call seeing the cause for each and everything, Paccaya Parikara. And when this happening, the Buddha says, it is naturally, more and more your mindfulness becomes subtle, you are bound to see the end. You can't do away with it. So the moment you see the beginning, the middle and end, it's called Samasanya. And they are, even if you see the materiality, it's exactly applicable to the mentality. The desire, I mean the painful feeling, if you see from the beginning, arising of the painful feeling is something to be hate. And when come up with a peak, due to the hatred, you can't see when it is disappearing, it's a pleasure. Due to the hate, you can't see. Otherwise, if you remove the hatred towards the painful feeling, if you are managing to see the beginning, when you come to the peak, definitely you have to say it is tapering off. They are, the starting part is the hatred, the disappearing part is the pressure. Other way around in the pressurable feeling. And all the perception, all the formations have the same. So, this, the seeing the middle without training, untrained mind see all of the middle. And if you are going to draw a conclusion, definitely you are finding the answer outwardly. And then no one can help you. Therefore, in order to bring the attention to you, you have to say that, see the beginning. When you are seeing the beginning, you will say, you definitely understand, you can nip it at the bud level. If you are not waiting till it grow up to a tree to chop it with the axe. So, this is exactly the principle. So, whenever you are going to see anything, how it develops, you become the master. So that is the only part. Up to that much you have to force. Up to that much you have to manipulate or focus yourself. And once you see it, it is natural for you to see the end. So when that happens, you see, if the world is full of suffering, seeing the beginning of suffering is invariably leading you to the to see the end of suffering. Then you slowly, slowly liberate. That is called Nirodha. Nirodha means disappearance, the tapering off. That tapering off part is so releasing. But if you consider this world as something good, positive, then tapering off happy like something bad. If you take the world means something suffering, the moment you see it's a Nirodha, so usually the Nirodha is a fearful thing, that is what we call the fear of suffering, fear of feeling. We are happy to see here the birthday of the baby. When it's dying off, it is not good. It is a few. We are not telling. When the flower is blooming, it's very good. And the petals are dropping, it is not good. Every time in the aesthetic world, in the physics and everything, we are highlighting the beginning part. And we are closing the chance that we see to see the end of it. But the Buddha says, see the beginning to the as early as possible, definitely your sharpness will come, and therefore the end you see, the moment you see everything arising as the nature of passing away. Passing away is the releasing part. Our mind has not been trained, it has become a black box. When you see that for the first time, Samasana Jnana, you come to know, not in the tiny particle level, but at the agglomeration level, arising at passing. And then only you are ready to sacrifice, and then you can go into the Udyapaya Jnana and a serious or powerful Vipassana Jnana and acclimatization. Preparation is happening at the Namrupa Pachyaparigraha and Samvatsaranyaya level. On the Samvatsaranyaya level, you have another acid test. Are you ready or not? Even again asking, are you ready? Now you have given all the tests you have passed. Will you take the second course? And then only you will be taken to the serious advanced level classes.
What is that test?
At the Samasana Jnana, you are given with the shaking of the mind and sweating and boredom and all the kind of thing. It is giving all the information and shaking you. Information itself is shaking. You feel the fearfulness, boredom, monotony, and cornered, lost, disintegrated. All the kinds of you feel, nauseatic, feel like gymnastic. So all these things indicates how you are facing, but for the good advanced yogi, it's a good dog. But those who are with the sensuous curve, sphere, it can be like a threat. So what they do is, they are changing the teacher, they are changing the object of meditation. They are changing the meditation techniques and kind of thinking it is not fitting with me, I have something wrong with the meditation. But of course it's a good sign if you interpret it in a proper way, because it's as it is. So that's why the association with the advanced people only can tell you, even then you won't believe. So you feel threatened. Only they can say this is a good sign. So that also you have to second with your life and your body. You have to second yourself. I have to look at it in a different view, in a different value system. And then only you are really becoming a yogi. Then onward only you will be concerned about your moral integrity, your concentration and the wisdom. Till then, it's called that faith. Beyond that, it's called resolute faith. The resolution comes there.
So the morals and everything doesn't matter at that moment.
Up to that moment, you are doing due to out of fear. Up to that moment, you are moral because you are fearful, not due to your deep understanding. Not due to your own verification. Verification happened at that level, and even then 95% will come back. They will never go over. Once you go there, in that moment, you become moral not to show others. You know your own justification. You know why you are becoming concentrated. You know without that you can't. Why should you become choiceless? You know it, not to show others. But for the gain and the fame, the resolution is going to take place. Then onward, you are striving. After that, you are just trying. Trying this and that, the right identity. Then onward, only you take, you commit yourself. Okay, now we have taken due time. So we'll go for 1 hour walking and come back at 3:30.